the big 550 KTRS. That is one of the groups that's going to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame tonight in a show that they will record and it'll air on HBO 3 weeks from now, Journey. And I just read this morning that after some internal battles, the current members of Journey, I don't think I include any of the originals, I don't know, but they've agreed to allow Steve Perry to not only come to the induction ceremony, but to come up on stage and sing one song with them. In the meantime, I guess what the guy who's the Filipino Steve Perry impersonator
is still the lead singer.
I think he is.
They found him on YouTube. The guy that sounds just like Steve Perry.
Yeah. So, Steve, you stay seated while we have a guy imitate you on stage, and then if you're nice to us, we'll let you come up on stage as well. Also, Yes and Rush and ELO, and two acts that I think when you look back on music history, you'll say, well, that's exactly, those two people did the same act, Joan Baez and Tupac Shakur.
Right, yes.
Same kind of music, folk rap. So that'll be on HBO on April 29th. This is the showbiz segment of the show, and it's brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States, the original $189 window company. Online at windowworldstlouis.com. I am Paul Harris. Ian Geis is here. Dan Strauss is off for the day, so Tim Weiland is filling in. And Max Foisy's here now for the movie stuff that we've got to get to and the rest of the showbiz stuff as well. Hi, Max. How are you?
Hi, Paul. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing okay. We have a few things to talk about, but I want to start talking about this movie that you and I both saw at a screening the other night called Going in Style.
Going in Style.
I have a lot to say.
You should go first.
About this movie. Okay. In 1979, there was a wonderful little movie called Going in Style, and it starred George Burns, who at that time was really hot after having done The Sunshine Boys and Oh God, and it starred Art Carney, who, of course, was a legend from The Honeymooners and had had his career resurrected by an Oscar-winning appearance in a movie called Harry and Tonto a few years earlier. And the third star of that movie was Lee Strasberg, who was essentially the guy who taught America how to act at the Actor's Studio, and with the method and all that stuff. So you had three very talented guys, and it was directed by Martin Brest, who has also made some quality movies, Beverly Hills Cop, Midnight Run, one of my favorites, Scent of a Woman. So you got three people who know what they're doing, showbiz veterans, and a director who knows what to do with them. And the plot of that movie was you have three old guys who have long since retired, and they're kind of bored with life, and they spend their days essentially sitting on a bench. They share an apartment because they can't afford to have separate apartments, so they share a three-bedroom apartment, but they don't have much to do all day long. They get their Social Security checks, and that's about it, and they're just bored. They go to the park, and they sit on the bench, and they watch the pigeons, and they watch the kids playing in the playground, and they listen to what's going on around them, but it's a boring life. And so one day, to break the boredom, they decide to rob a bank, just as a little adventure, something to give them a little bit of excitement in their life. And in order to get disguises for the bank robbery, they go to a costume store, and instead of getting masks or anything else, they get Groucho glasses, you know, with the fake mustache and the fake nose and the black horn rim glasses. And that's what they wear when they go to rob the bank. Now, I should have said spoiler alert, but I don't think I have to on a movie that came out in 1979. In the excitement of pulling this off, which they do pull off, and they do some plotting, and they use cabs on the subway to get away and all that sort of stuff. Nobody gets hurt. They get away, but the excitement of that is too much for the Lee Strasberg character, whose heart gives out, and he dies that night in their apartment. The next day, George Burns and Art Carney have pulled this off, and they've got the money stashed away in Art Carney's nephew's house, but now they're back to being bored. So George Burns says, why don't we go someplace? Where do you want to go? I don't know. Where can we go? Well, now that we have some money, you want to go to Las Vegas? Yeah, I've never been to Las Vegas in my life. So the two of them decide to go to Las Vegas, and they have a great adventure in Las Vegas where they go and they play craps and they win a lot of money. and they have a hotel room, and they get comped the hotel room, and George Burns, who's the smartest of the three, realizes we can't stay here because somebody's going to say, who are these two old guys? Where'd they come from? What happened? Where'd this money come from? Et cetera, et cetera. So they get on the next flight back after only being there for a few hours. They get back on the next flight back to New York, and they go on with their lives. Well, that excitement was too much for the Art Carney character. And he dies in his sleep, and now George Burns is left alone. And he goes and he talks to Art Carney's nephew's character and says, look, you have all the money. It's stashed away in the suitcase. No matter what happens, don't ever, 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 ever tell anybody where that money came from. And the son, the nephew swears to it, and the next minute, next thing you know is the cops show up at the apartment building, and they arrest George Burns as he comes out and he walks, and that's the end of the movie. Now, I just told you the whole plot of Going in Style.
Sure.
And the reason I told you that is because it's a character study mm-hmm. of these three guys. It's a quiet movie. There are no car crashes. There are no chases. There's no slapstick. There's no wackiness. It's just about these three extremely talented actors playing out these lives that are towards the end of their lives and having this adventure.
To clarify, the 1979 Martin Brest movie.
Correct.
Was everything you just said.
Correct.
Right.
So I'm telling you about the original movie so that we can contrast it with this new movie that is opening up today, which stars three good actors. Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine, and Alan Arkin. Now, if they were actually remaking the original, which I don't think needed to be remade, it was perfect the way it was. But, okay, we've had almost 40 years go by. That's the way the movie industry works. They look for ideas to remake, so they're remaking this one. Okay, fine. And you got three pretty good actors there. And you've got actors who have done iconic roles on screen. You've got Morgan Freeman, who did Driving Miss Daisy and The Shawshank Redemption. Those are two different characters, but he pulled them off because he wasn't doing just the same thing he always does. He had Michael Caine, who's, I mean, what are two
he's done everything.
Great Michael Caine movies? Even going back to Alfie or Educating Rita mm-hmm. or all sorts of other things. Harry Brown,
Italian
all sorts of
job.
Other things. So, yeah. And you've got Alan Arkin, who, you know, Wait Until Dark, The Russians Are Coming, Argo a few years ago.
Little Miss Sunshine recently.
Yes, yes. All wonderful, different kind of characters. Unfortunately, in this movie, they are given a script that you could have handed to any actor over 70 who can speak English. And instead of getting iconic actors giving iconic performances, you get predictable, formulaic performances in a predictable, formulaic plot. I really was disappointed in this movie. What about you?
You feel you have many more feelings about this movie.
But
than
because I
do.
Love the original movie.
I am indifferent towards this movie that Zach Braff has made. This is the first movie that Zach Braff has directed that he did not write. We all know Zach Braff from Scrubs. He was a comedic actor. He wrote and directed a movie called Garden State back in 2004.
Overrated.
Oh, see, I disagree. I think it's very, very good.
Okay.
And then he did a movie a couple years ago, somewhat controversially. He kickstarted it so he could get a final cut, but then people were like, why are we giving you money? Called Wish I Was Here, which I also liked. So I think it's strange that he's branching out to become sort of a director for hire. I do think it's kind of cool that he would want to remake a Martin Brest film, though, because as you said, his stuff is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Midnight Run, one of the greatest comedies of all time.
And by the way, I guarantee you somebody in Hollywood saying, well, now we have to remake Midnight Run.
Boy, who could you even get? I mean, you're not going to match Charles Grodin in that movie.
And Robert De Niro,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And John Ashton.
I don't like to watch trailers before I go see movies.
Right.
I don't like to go to IMDb because you're spoiled.
Yep.
But I'd seen the original 1979 movie, so I thought, well, I can't really be spoiled on this. I'll go to the Wikipedia of the new version just to see, like, how did Zach Braff get involved in this and everything. And there's a little blurb. And I read this before I saw the movie,
mm-hmm.
that there was a screenwriter who'd worked on a couple other movies, and he loved the first film, and he wanted to remake it and kind of give them a different reason. It was because they'd lost their pensions, so it wasn't just, you know, a random reason to rob a bank. He wanted to give that to them. The producer said to them, okay, but only if they get away with it.
Right.
He goes, I'm tired of all these melancholy endings. you can write it, and we'll make the movie if they get. So all of a sudden, and I know I've just spoiled the movie, but I was spoiled before I went in, and I feel like I have to say it because the only reason this movie was made is because they get away with it.
Yes, it's a cop-out ending. By the way, it's a double cop-out ending, which won't get into that.
Well,
it's that Hollywood sickness of we have to have a happy ending.
And I,
you know, if they remade Dog Day Afternoon, Al Pacino and John Cazale would get away with the money.
So I don't know. I can count on one hand the amount of times I felt it necessary to discuss the ending of movies because I don't like spoiling things.
Yeah.
But I think this might actually sell tickets to the movie for older people who want a happy ending, who don't want to be on pins and needles. And I think this movie, it's different enough from that first movie beyond the title that honestly I'm surprised that they're connecting it because old people robbing a bank, the story other than that is so very different than that first
it's
movie.
It's lame.
I'm kind of surprised that they would even call it a remake.
They turned a wonderful little character study into a revenge fantasy because the bank is foreclosing on one character's house and they're losing their pensions.
Which also doesn't make a lot of sense. They happen to go to work the day that their press conference is held. That doesn't really make a whole
nothing
lot of sense.
Nothing in this plot, in this script makes sense. And by the way, here's another reason I was disappointed. You know who wrote the script? Theodore Melfi, the guy who wrote Hidden Figures, my favorite movie of the year.
That's right. Yeah, he was the one who wanted to remake it because he likes the original one. And his directive was, we will let you write it if it has a happy ending.
Can I tell you a couple other things I like about it?
Absolutely. You're riled up.
Yes.
You're ramped up.
They put a romantic interest in here. For Alan Arkin's character, she's played by Anne Margaret in exactly the same role she played in Grumpy Old Men. The cute, kittenish woman of age.
Sure.
Who one of them can get involved with. That's ridiculous. There is a scene in this movie. Oh, man. There's a scene in this movie.
I know the cop-out scene that you're talking about, though, at the very end.
Oh, okay.
Because for a moment, you're thinking, oh, okay, and then nope.
Nope. No. But there's a scene in this movie where these characters have to rehearse before they go do their bank robbery.
Inexplicable. It took me so out of the movie. I was confused. I'm still confused about that whole scene.
To rehearse, they go and shoplift from a supermarket. Now, if you're going to practice for a bank robbery, that's going to involve getting guns and knowing about the bank and where everything is in the bank. If you're going to do that in a supermarket, you would go and you would hold up a cashier or hold up the person who has the safe and all that sort of
stuff.
Find
out where the cameras are
and do
a stick-up.
In this movie, when they go do the supermarket shoplifting scene, they literally go through the supermarket stuffing items into their pants and shirts. And people at the screening that we saw this with were laughing.
Yes.
And I thought, no, this is not funny. This is sick. This is guys who are up there in years, who have their pensions and their savings pulled away from them, who are so broke they have to shoplift for food. That's not comedy.
And I was utterly confused. Why were they trying to make
There's no reason
blue?
For them to be in there.
Completely confused.
And of course, there's also a scene where the three of them smoke a joint with another character who didn't need to be in the movie. And of course, it's funny because old people are smoking a joint. I got news for you. When they were young, they were smoking joints, these guys.
I was happy, though, there were no Viagra jokes. There were no prune juice jokes. It wasn't as egregious as something like Dirty Grandpa for me as far as making fun of their age.
You don't need slapstick shoplifting in a supermarket to make these characters likable. The actors are already likable. Mm-hmm. The characters themselves should be likable enough. You should be rooting for them, but not for the revenge reasons and the other reasons of this movie. Let me ask you this. If this, the 2017 version of Going in Style, were the original, we'd never seen the other one. Mm. If this were the first time this movie were made, would it ever be remade?
Probably with a more melancholy bent like that first one, because they would realize something was missing. I didn't have the strong feeling that you had with this movie. I thought it was just fine. The audience that we saw with really responded to it.
I know.
Now this is going to sound like a shot, or I'm trying to, you know, pat people on the head. I'm not. But I think in a couple of years, when this is on Blu-ray at a retirement home, and that clientele is able to put it, I think they're going to say, "Let's watch Going in Style again." It is wish fulfillment for elderly people.
You know, there have been some very good movies made with an older cast. Here's just a few of them.
This is better than Bucket List.
Yes, it is. But
it's not a high bar.
Look at Best Exotic Marigold Hotel with Judi Dench and Tom Wilkinson and Maggie Smith and Bill Nye. Look at here's the greatest movie ever made with an elderly cast, Cocoon.
Mm-hmm.
directed by Ron Howard, Wilford Brimley, Hume Cronin, Jack Gilford, Gwen Verdon, Maureen Stapleton, Jessica Tandy. Don Ameche won an Oscar for his role in that. Grumpy Old Men, which I mentioned. You could put that in there. Don't forget about Burgess Meredith's role in that movie, too. And Ossie Davis. They're all very funny. Then you have the not-so-good movies that were just kind of okay that you would watch on cable. Did you ever see a movie called My Fellow Americans?
No.
With James Garner and Jack Lemmon playing two ex-presidents?
I remember the poster.
It's not that good, but because of the two of them, it kind of works. How about a movie called Space Cowboys?
Yes, with Clint Eastwood,
Tommy Lee Jones, Donald Sutherland, James Garner, and James Cromwell. Okay, not bad. Here's the horrible list. And when I saw you the other night at the screening, you said, what are you expecting? And I said, I'm expecting Last Vegas.
Oh, right.
Last Vegas was a movie that came out 2, 3, maybe 4 years ago.
Kevin Kline. What's Kevin Kline doing in that movie?
Also Morgan Freeman, by the way.
Oh, that's right.
And Robert De Niro and Michael Douglas as four guys who are up there in years. Michael Douglas's character is getting married. The four of them decide to go to Las Vegas and have a bachelor party, even though they're up there in years. And everything you could put in a predictable script happens to them, and it's terrible. There's not one laugh in the movie. There's also one that came out just a few months ago called The Comedian, again with Robert De Niro as an old guy.
Your worst film of the year so far.
Yes, you're correct.
So worse than Going in Style.
Yes.
Okay.
And also one other I have to throw in there from 2012, a movie called Stand Up Guys with Al Pacino and Christopher Walken, who look up their old buddy, played by Alan Arkin, and they go off and have a wild night. Huh. Now, do you see a theme here? These same very talented actors who are up there in years keep getting trapped in these crappy scripts and these crappy movies. You know, actresses complain once you get to 40, there are no good roles for women over 40. You compare the ones I just made with these people to any Meryl Streep movie.
True.
Any Susan Sarandon movie. There are plenty of other women who are out there who are doing Helen Mirren.
Sure. Compare. She's in a Fast and Furious franchise. I mean, come on now.
You compare the quality of the work that the men are doing and the quality of the work the women are doing, and the men keep falling into this same garbage dump that gave us Going in Style.
I thought Going in Style was just fine, especially if you happen to be about 70.
Okay, so what do you give it on a scale of 10?
I think the star rating goes up the older you are. So you have to do it on a sliding scale. I think for its audience, I'd give it about a 6 or a 7.
What about for your average audience?
For me, I would give it about a 4, just below average.
Okay, I'm giving it a 3, one for each of the stars who I like. Morgan Freeman, Alan Arkin, and Michael Caine. But I would be much better off watching any movie they made before 2000, or anybody would be much better off. Now, the original movie, Going in Style, it's not streaming. There are no 1979 movies that are streaming.
Actually, it is streaming on, I believe, Amazon for $2.99. You can rent it.
Okay, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, it's not free to stream.
There are a lot of old movies that you can go on Amazon Video, and you can watch for $3 or $4.
Yep.
Instead of spending $20 to go see the new version of Going in Style, forget that. Stay home, spend $3 or $4, which is the one price for everybody who's in the room, and watch the original. It's wonderful.
It's
the actors are terrific. And don't. You know, this is the big release of this weekend.
Yes. No, I know.
Is it going to make money?
Usually movies that are aimed at certain demos, like, for instance, Boss Baby, it's for 10 and under. So Going in Style is for 80 and over. I think 80? That those people will go see it. So, yeah, I think it'll do pretty well.
But it's not going to play like just a Plaza Frontenac. This is getting a big release.
It's a wide release.
A couple thousand theaters.
Yeah. I think there's a curiosity factor because of Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman and Alan Arkin. People love those guys.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a, you know, people, it's not going to have legs. You know, or hips, you know, after the first weekend. But it could be all right.
Speaking of actors of a certain age, there's a documentary that's going to air on HBO on June 5th, which is going to be hosted by our friend Carl Reiner, who, by the way, did not mention this project when we talked to him last week. Maybe he forgot.
He had so much going on.
The movie is called If You're Not in the Obit, Eat Breakfast, which is based on a line that Carl has said to me over the years, which is, I asked him, what's your routine? He says, I get up in the morning, I look at the newspaper, if my name's not in the obits, I go have breakfast. So this documentary is about people over 90 who are still working, like Tony Bennett, Mel Brooks, Kirk Douglas, Carl, Norman Lear, Stan Lee,
sure,
the comic book icon, yep, Betty White, Dick Van Dyke, they're all in there. It also has people like Harriet Thompson, who's 93. She was the oldest woman to run and finish a marathon. There's a guy who fought in D-Day, who's 95 years old and still parachutes, and a guy who was a yoga teacher who marched with Gandhi, this guy, Tao Porchon Lynch, 98 years old, recently took up the tango. The tango at 98 years old.
It only takes one to tango when you're 98, so it's okay.
That's going to be on HBO on June 5th, and that will be a better movie, yes, about old people than Going in Style.
So, you know, this weekend, the Wizard World Comic Con is in town. It's over at America Center.
Yes.
And the very first year that it came to town, about 5 years ago, Stan Lee was the big featured guest.
Yes.
And so I shelled out a whole lot of money to meet the man, talk to him about Peter Parker, get a picture with him, get his autograph, because I thought, well, this is probably the last time that Stan's going to be able to do this stuff, because now he's over 90, still doing cons.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. Blows, yep, my mind.
Good for him. Good for him. Now let's take a break. When we come back, we have to talk about a 90-year-old who died yesterday, Don Rickles, and we've got a whole bunch of other showbiz stuff to get to as we continue along here on the Big 550 KTRS. Here's another one of the bands that will be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame tonight. The Electric Light Orchestra, led by Jeff Lynn. I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss is off today. Get this, he went to Little Rock.
On purpose?
On purpose. He was forced to by his girlfriend. He's off today, but Ian's here laughing at that. And Max is here because we're doing the showbiz stuff, and we both did we lacerate? Going in style.
I sort of stood aside. Well, I took a step aside while you took a machete to it.
You were an accomplice.
Well, I drove the getaway car.
Let's talk about legendary comedian Don Rickles, who died yesterday. Were you a Don Rickles fan?
I was more growing up in the era that I did. I was more amazed that Don Rickles was able to exist. Because while the 80s and the 90s certainly weren't as PC as we are today, you still didn't go on a talk show and just lacerate everybody. And the fact that people were his friends and they thought he was great to have around, and he would mock them mercilessly. The closest thing that I had to that when I was a teenager was probably Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, which, mm-hmm, is obviously a huge tribute to Don Rickles, mm-hmm, by Robert Smigel. But I retweeted something yesterday when he passed away. There was a clip from the Tonight Show where Frank Sinatra was telling the story, and I'm sure that we've all heard the clip. We all know the story where he was on a date, Don Rickles was, and walked over to Frank and said, "My date doesn't think I know you. Can you just come by and make
me
look
a big
good?
Favor? Yeah, yeah, it'll make me look good. Yeah."
So Frank's like, all right. So he finishes his dinner and he comes back over. He goes, "Hey, Don, it's nice to see you. How you doing?" And Don's like, "Can't you see I'm eating here?"
Yes.
That's one of the greatest things I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
So obviously,
especially
incredibly,
to somebody who could heckle Frank Sinatra.
Yes.
I mean, nobody else was able to do that.
The other great line I heard from Don Rickles about Sinatra was, you know, Frank Sinatra saved my life one night. He said, "Okay, that's enough."
Nice. So I can't say that I was a fan of his, but I was always sort of in awe that his whole brand of comedy, which absolutely died with him yesterday.
Yes, and definitely the last of an era. Call it the Rat Pack era, if you will. He's the last.
He outlived everybody else.
Yeah.
And you know, with all the tributes that I've heard over the past couple of days here, I'm surprised. Usually it's the last thing the person does that people glob onto. And instead, it's been his amazing history throughout the decades. But people are kind of forgetting Mr. Potato Head. And I'm a little surprised by this.
Yes.
Because when he said, "Hey, a hockey puck," it was an actual hockey puck.
Correct.
In Toy Story, which is hilarious.
Yeah, and now I have to ask you, they're making a Toy Story 4.
They are.
Has he recorded his parts?
He did not record any of his parts. Mr. Potato Head is in the script. They were expecting him to come back. I don't know now if they'll get a sound alike or if they'll just write out the character.
Mm-hmm.
But he was expected to be a part of Toy Story 4. Did not record any of his lines.
He was so good, I even liked the woman who played Mrs. Potato Head. "Don't forget your angry eyes." That was just a wonderful part of the Pixar movie-making genius.
Yep.
If you haven't seen it, Jimmy Kimmel, did a 12-minute long tribute to Don Rickles at the beginning of his show last night in his monologue, in which Jimmy Kimmel tears up and, in fact, cries while he's doing this because he was very close friends, apparently, with Don Rickles. I never felt that way about the man, but I liked him in some movies, which not enough people talk about, and it doesn't come up a lot in interviews like Kelly's Heroes and some of the other stuff he did. And by the way, I
checked... Casino?
Casino. He was Heroes, right-hand man.
And... I like this movie, but it wasn't acclaimed at all. It was the Norm Macdonald
Dirty Work.
Yes. He's very funny in that.
Yeah,
he was doing just essentially him, just roasting Norm.
And if you go on IMDb, you will see that Don Rickles appeared in every 60s sitcom there was. For some reason, he was not only on the Dick Van Dyke Show, he was also on Bewitched. He was on Gilligan's Island. He was on Get Smart.
Yeah, see, I want to see that episode now. I want to see him on the island.
Every one of those. There was also a documentary about him that John Landis made in 2007, 10 years ago, called Mr. Warmth, The Don Rickles Project, which I was not a huge Rickles fan, but I kind of appreciated him for the work that he was able to do. And by the way, kept working up until last year.
And this is sort of a cliche about comics, especially mean ones, but that doc was called Mr. Warmth for a reason, not only a play because he was mean to everybody, but apparently he was the nicest guy.
Yes.
With the biggest heart. And I know people are rolling their eyes right now, but apparently he was Mr. Warmth if you actually knew him.
That documentary is streaming now on Netflix. Do you think you could start out as a comedian today doing on stage what Don Rickles does?
No, because even the comics who are trying to do that now with the roast that they have and the Comedy Central roast and Lisa Lampanelli and all these people,
Jeff Ross,
they're nowhere near what he was doing because he got so personal and he would be so... he would make fun of stereotypes nonstop. It was just something you can't
do. He certainly couldn't get away with some of the stuff he did about ethnicities.
No.
50, 60 years ago, it was a different America.
But also, he's making fun of those stereotypes. I don't think that he was trying to reinforce them to say, well, yes, all Irish people are drunk. Nowadays, that's how that comes across. I think at the time, it's almost like an Archie Bunker thing. He's saying, this is how ridiculous it is that we reduce people to one buzzword.
Yep.
But that's smart, and people, they don't do well with smart.
A couple of other TV notes. Better Call Saul returns Monday night for season 3. Ian and I were just talking about it during the break. This is the season that Gus Fring comes back. If you watch Breaking Bad, you knew Gus Fring as the what would you call him? The meth lord of Albuquerque?
He just runs
proprietor
place. Yeah.
of Los Pollos Hermanos.
Right.
Yeah, he just runs a chicken place.
That's all
he
is
talking about.
Yeah. He was a fantastic character, and the fact that they're bringing him back means that somewhere along this season you can expect the Jimmy McGill character that Bob Odenkirk plays to get closer and closer to the ultimate character he's going to play in Breaking Bad, which is Saul Goodman. This is a prequel, and now people are saying, oh, so are we eventually going to get to see Walter White? No, you're not going to see Walter White. Bryan Cranston will not be on Better Call Saul. Certainly not this season. Maybe at the end when they decide that's it, maybe that'll be when we see him.
Cranston's been asked that question a ton recently, and he said the only reason he would do it or the only way he could do it is if he's Walter White, the school teacher. If he just walks in, orders some chicken, and leaves. Like, he can't be...
Right.
Heisenberg, because that's way in... In the future.
Correct.
So, yeah.
There would have to be a big time jump there. Other TV note I want to mention is a new show debuted on Wednesday night on IFC called Brockmire, which actually is based on something that Hank Azaria did a few years ago for Funny or Die. Jim Brockmire is a caricature of every one of the play-by-play announcers who talk kind of like this the entire time they're doing their ball game. This is exactly how they talk. There's a high fastball, strike two. You know, they tell stories. You know, Jack Buck was great at this. Vin Scully was great at this. Bob Uecker, who, by the way, this week started his 47th year.
Wow.
Calling Milwaukee Brewer games.
Wow.
You know how long the Milwaukee Brewers have been around? 47 years. He's done every brewery here. That's amazing. And, of course, he kind of has that voice.
Yeah.
The thing about Brockmeyer is he has this voice when he's not doing the games. So he'll be going, you know, through his regular life and ordering, I'll have a whiskey and put it in a short glass. You know, he talks in that sports guy voice. Have you seen the show?
I actually just watched the premiere episode with my wife just last night. We streamed it.
Did you watch the full hour or just the
yes.
first half hour?
No, the full hour.
Because it's a half hour show and they ran two of them on Wednesday night.
We watched the full hour, and I have to say I thought Amanda Peet was really fantastic.
Yes.
She is the, I don't know how much you want to give away, but she owns a minor league team.
Yes.
Sort of a zero league team.
Yes.
And that's where Brockmeyer finds himself.
And the reason he finds himself doing a minor league team is because 10 years ago he was the play-by-play guy for the Kansas City Royals, and one day while he was doing the game on the air, he had a few too many drinks and started talking about catching his wife in bed with several other people, including one guy who, and now I can't describe the rest of it.
No, you can't.
I actually went
Please stop
online,
talking.
I actually went online today to find a clip that I could play because I'm kind of not doing the voice the way Hank Azaria does it so perfectly. And I thought, well, we'll just play that on the air. There's no 15 seconds I can play for you.
It is a very dirty show. Every third word is something we can't say on the radio, but my wife and I thought it was hilarious, and Hank Azaria is so great in the role, and I don't really know where it's going to go as far as the story.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I liked him a whole lot, and I thought Amanda Peet was really great.
Yeah, I agree. Brockmeyer, it's called. If you didn't see it on Wednesday night, I'm sure it's available through your cable system on demand, or maybe the IFC app or somewhere. You may want to search that out. A couple of other things. Louis C.K.'s new Netflix special debuted this week. Did you check that out at all?
I did not. It's called 2017.
Yes, it is. About 60% funny.
Hmm.
I would say the last third to 40% of the show is just not that good.
Hmm.
It's like he had 40 minutes of good material and then tacked on 20 or 25 that just doesn't work.
Hmm.
But in that first 40 minutes, he does some very funny observations. I'm not going to imitate him, but I'll just tell you, in one segment he talks about, I'm not a religious person. I wasn't raised religiously. I'm not raising my daughters religiously. I have no problem if you're religious. That's okay. But when it comes to religion, I think we all have to admit one thing, and that is the Christians won. And you hear people in the audience like, where's he going with this?
Right.
What's going on? And he says, no, you don't believe me? Let me ask you one simple question. What year is it?
Nice.
Is there anybody in here who doesn't think it's 2017? What does 2017 come from? That comes from Christ's birth. He said, now you may say, well, what about the Jewish calendar? Yeah, even they know that it's the year 2017. And they says, okay, now you might go, okay, well, what about Chinese New Year? Chinese New Year says, okay, I'll tell you what, this year when you fill out your tax returns, under year, put monkey. Now, I think you'll have to agree with me in that regard.
Nice.
The Christians have won. It's very funny, but also very raunchy. One other TV note to mention tonight, Showtime has a documentary about the Beach Boys that goes back to the making of the album Pet Sounds, which was the album where Brian Wilson had Wouldn't It Be Nice and God Only Knows and a few other absolute classic Beach Boys hits. But it was the album that inspired the Beatles to be as creative as they could be to make Sgt. Pepper. Even Paul McCartney today will tell you that was where he and John drew their inspiration from, because they saw Brian Wilson changing the paradigm of rock music on that album. Now, I've not seen the documentary yet, but I do have the DVR set to record it, 7 o'clock Central Time tonight, and then I'm sure it'll run many other times over the course of the next month or so.
Have
on
you
Showtime.
Seen Love and Mercy?
Yes, I did.
I thought that was phenomenal.
Is that streaming?
You know, I don't think it is.
Because it's over a year old?
Yeah, yeah, but I love that movie. I watched it twice the year it came out. I couldn't get over how they were able to meld the songs together in the background to kind of make you feel like you were hearing how Brian Wilson heard music.
Yes.
Which is very different and very strange because he had this mental breakdown while he was making that very record.
You see, Paul Dano, the actor, plays the young Brian Wilson during the Beach Boys years, and the scenes in the studio where they're working with the Wrecking Crew, because the rest of the, Mike Love and the rest of the Beach Boys are on tour. Brian Wilson didn't go on tour with them. He stayed in the studio with these studio musicians known as the Wrecking Crew, legendary group of musicians in Los Angeles, and they actually made that album.
But they all think he's crazy. Because he's like, take this again and do this again, and I want a bell here. And they're like, "What? Aren't we making a Beach Boys record?" Like, nobody could foresee what he was trying to do with music. It was incredible.
And it also stars John Cusack as the older Brian Wilson, who has to deal with, what was the name of the doctor?
Paul Giamatti's
character, played by Paul Giamatti.
He's really
not
great.
Not really a doctor. No. He called himself doctor,
who's
whatever it was.
Controlling his life, basically.
Therapist who ran his life. And I also thought it was Elizabeth Banks' best performance on screen.
Probably.
Playing the woman who Brian Wilson falls for. So it's not streaming now, but you can get it, I'm sure, Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Again, $3-4
Worth it.
And that's the thing I think a lot of people don't think about. You know, your cable or satellite system may have on-demand movies. They're mostly current movies, although there are some that are a year or two old. Some of it may go back, you know, because Stars might be showing something, and so they make it available on demand as well from 15 or 20 years ago. But if you have an Amazon account, Amazon Prime Video, even if you don't have Amazon Prime where you can watch movies for free,
you can still rent.
Yeah, you rent them there, watch them for $3 or $4
Same as Blockbuster prices back in the day.
Exactly.
You know.
Definitely worth it. All right, that's our showbiz stuff for this week. Thank you, Max.
Thank you, Paul.
Next hour, the Harris Challenge, Knuckleheads in the News, and Mike Evans all ahead on the Big 550 KTRS.